Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. This episode is sponsored by ReviewRobin, a review management software for marketing agencies to help you guys get your clients more positive reviews. You can check that out at getreviewrobin.com. Now, our guest today is Dan Gershenson of Caliber Brand Strategy and Content Marketing. Dan is the ideal partner for service-based businesses that are in need of insightful brand strategies and powerful content to resonate with their customers. Today, we are going to be talking about Dan's journey as an entrepreneur and what he's learned along the way. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dan.
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So let's dive into a couple of questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So tell us, where are you tuning in from today?
I am from Chicago. I am on the north side of the city. And hopefully going to be a warmer day than most Marches in Chicago, but you just never know.
Exactly. But yes, I'm
here. This is my office.
Very good. And what would you say inspires you as an entrepreneur?
You know, what inspires me as an entrepreneur is that every day is totally different than the next. And that variety is something that I think has always really gotten me to think about how can I help someone today? How can I make a difference in their lives today? Mm-hmm. And difference does not have to be something even grand. I think I always try to look back on what's going to make what made today great, or what is going to make today great in terms of the number of lives that I may touch in my own way. And it does not have to be necessarily a client that that happens for. It could be a post on social media that really gets people thinking, or they like what I had to say. They want to share it with other folks. And there's nothing, believe it or not, that is, you know, selfish there as far as exposure and promoting me as much as really feeling good about myself and who I'm changing for the better. That's a really inspirational part of what I do.
I love that. That's awesome. And then how did you originally get into digital marketing?
Well, it's funny, not to date myself, but I think I actually started on the traditional marketing side about 25 years ago. And digital marketing, was something where some people said, well, I think we should have a website. You know, these websites, should we do them? And you know, social media just kind of had started around, you know, the early 2000s or so. And it still was in its infancy. And I was doing a lot of print, radio, TV, direct mail, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And digital marketing came along, and very quickly it became something where it was like, no, this isn't a nice to have. It's a must have. And now obviously it's become a lot of everything we are. And mm-hmm. There was a time, if people can remember, where digital marketing in an agency had its own floor. It was like, oh, those are the digital marketing people. Mm-hmm. And and now it sounds pretty silly, but that is where I looked at it and said, no matter what, whether I'm doing something for a print ad, or I'm doing something for a website, or now social media, email, whatever, the principles of what happens in advertising and marketing are still there. You still have to find somebody who's going to be just an amazing, ideal client to think about as mm-hmm. far as who you're going to talk to, the strategy behind what you do, none of that changes from traditional media to digital media. And so right. it's only in the last, say, 10, 15 years that I honestly, as a writer, felt like digital media is something I should have been doing all along and just would have loved to have it even sooner.
Yeah.
Because I grew up on doing ads that had like, okay, you can only do 3 or 4 sentences. Well, a blog is kind of a writer's dream. You get to do 800, 1,000, maybe 2,000 words, and you could exactly. never do that in a regular ad. So it was a real blessing when content marketing came along and all the possibilities with electronic media ever since.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So it sounds like you really found what you were passionate about when once you yeah. discovered that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been passionate about marketing. I'm one of the rare people, I think, who went to college for a certain thing and are still doing it.
Yeah, it's true.
But I really just, I've always loved trying to tell a brand story. And usually it's a brand that it's not the sexiest brand usually. It's more like, okay, here's something that's technology or financial or things like that, that, you know, maybe not be easy to understand all the time. And so hearing that kind of getting that story down very, very quickly, getting into a company and almost having a crash course really within 2-3 weeks. Okay, I get what you do. I get who you're trying to do this for, but here's what I think you need to say. Mm-hmm. That never gets old. I mean, that to me, I think the very first ads I did were like 1 inch with classified ads. I mean, they were like as small as it gets. So I wasn't doing stuff for Nike right out of the gate. Or
right,
anything.
You paid your dues.
I think, yeah, I mean, I just said, just give me anything, because I think it was just my parents were like that. They're just like, just do whatever they need you to do and you'll get the good stuff as long as you work hard. And eventually that happened. So, yeah.
Love yeah. it. So tell us your story about starting Caliber Brand Strategy and Content Marketing.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny story because this is actually my second agency, which is, most people, you know, they really think it's the first, oh, is this the first time out? I'm like, no, actually, it's the second time. And I'm not almost supposed to be doing this when I think about it. I'm from here. I'm from Chicago originally, grew up in the suburbs, and I spent a number of years. I went down to Florida after about 10 years of working in the business, because I just always wanted to live somewhere different. I've never lived anywhere warm. So I had the opportunity to go down to a marketing firm, and I really was only going to stay there a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then I happened to run into two great guys who one was a designer, the other was more a writer too, but also new business development. Definitely was way, way better at sales than I ever could be. And so we said, you know, hey, let's open our own thing together. And suddenly I ended up staying there even longer than I thought. And after about 5-6 years of it, I really, really started to feel the pull of coming back home. And mm-hmm. I said, you know, this is just what I'm supposed to be doing. That's where I'm supposed to be. My family's here and everything. And so we moved back and everything. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go back and work for agencies. That's what I've done.
Right.
And my wife said, no, you're not. You can't work for anybody else. I know you. You're not going to like it. Once you're your own boss, you're your own boss. And you've done a lot of things now that you're not that copywriter who came up, you know, working for somebody else anymore. You are somebody who knows about strategy and you know about a lot of different things. And I'm sorry, but I don't think you're going to like it if you go work for somebody else. You need to do your own thing.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well, I guess, but you know, what should I call this thing? And she said, you should call it Caliber, because you are the highest caliber content marketing person I know. And yes, she's incredibly biased, but that was really something where I'm like, you know what? I'm going with it.
Nice.
And so, and that was, that'll be 10 years ago in July. And this is the longest thing I've ever done, but I definitely did not think I was going to be doing this right in the very beginning. Especially when I moved back here. So, it was really just, kind of like a lot of people who do side hustle stuff where they might work somewhere else a couple days a week, but then just started to get, some freelance clients. And I thought, oh, okay, that's nice. It'll be some extra money. It's good.
Yep.
But when you're doing one or two, and then two or three of those, and then three or four, freelance clients, it suddenly starts to, you know, you're like, okay, well, I'm working somewhere else, let's say subcontracting a couple days a week at an agency, but then I've also got these guys. And eventually you have to make the jump, uncomfortable as it is, and yes. Say, where am I going to be? Like, you can't be doing side hustles forever. You have to be like, am I all in on working for somebody else, or am I going to take the leap and do my own thing? And it's really scary. There's never a good time. There's never a perfect time.
No.
But I think you just have to say, I've got some here, and I think I'm going to bet on myself. And that's the way it was on the first agency. We totally were just like, okay, it was really scary. We had lined up some things. We had done like a logo, business card, stuff like that, maybe a website. Mm-hmm. But it was still, you know, there's a lot. We were meeting with people, with clients, honestly, on our lunch hour while working with somebody else, for somebody else. I mean, that was
that's intense.
So we're like, I cannot keep doing this. This is crazy.
I gotta eat at some point.
and that's what happened in the second time around. It was like, oh my God, I'm taking phone calls with freelance people on my lunch hour in this place's lunchroom. Like, I cannot keep doing this.
Yeah.
So you just have to eventually just go all in. The side hustle thing, I'm not a big believer in it. I'm only a believer in it for like 3 to 6 months. And then you got to say, this is me. I'm just all in.
Temporary stepping stone.
Yeah. Do what you got to do to build it up. Don't go cold turkey and jump off. I wouldn't do that. But it's kind of like in that movie, classic movie, The Shawshank Redemption, where every little bit where Andy was trying to dig his way out of they didn't just escape one day. They were, every little bit he was digging a hole and shaking the rocks out in the yard, a prison yard. And if you're going to make your escape, plan it, you know, plan your escape, do a little bit every single day, mm-hmm. and then you're never going to be ready. There's always going to be the hesitation. There is no perfect time.
Yep.
But you need to make the jump and say, this is as good as it's ever going to be. And if I have to bet on somebody, bet on myself. And that's what you have to do. If it's any consolation of any kind, anything that makes people feel better about this, even if it doesn't work out, the most I have ever learned was not from a book, not from a seminar, not from a course, not from anything else other than failed experiences. Good experiences too, but failed experiences have taught me so much and made me so much smarter because of that. Things I wouldn't wish on maybe anybody, but it made me smarter this time around in so many ways.
Yeah, just turn that failed experience into a learning lesson, take out what you can from it, and try not to make that mistake again.
yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, there's no beating yourself up. And the thing that I recommend that people always do is surround yourself with the people who are going to be there for you no matter what.
Yes.
And I think that's probably a big reason why I'm doing this today is if it wasn't for family, if it wasn't for good friends, if it wasn't for mentors, past bosses, you know, all those people that you could just, you know, lean on and still I lean on and say, hey, is this a good idea? Is this something that, you know, I should be doing? What do you think? You know, I'll give you an example. Sometimes what to charge is like the hardest thing sometimes for people to do. They're like, what's a good price here? What? And they often give things away. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm probably worth more, but I didn't know. So I had to like ask other people. Or if you have imposter syndrome, it happens to all of us. We all have self-doubt. We all compare ourselves. We all do kinds of things where we're like, am I good enough to still do this? Mm-hmm. And you have to have those other people in your life to say, that's just your own head trash. Like, get it out of there. That's just you. You're your own worst competitor. You're doing just fine, more than just fine. And they snap you back into reality very quickly.
Yeah, I love it. It's so true. And and that support system, it sounds like your wife played a huge role in you even starting the business as well. So
I've worked with her in the first one. People will say, what's that like to work with any kind of spouse or family member and stuff? And I know people who have. And I say, it can be done. I don't recommend doing the same thing as maybe them. Like, for example, I'm a creative, but she did office management. So she did all the administrative, all the billing, all that kind of stuff. And so it was like, okay, that's your side and this is my side.
Yep.
And it's said many, many times before, but try not to bring it home. I have a client. There's probably, I don't know, 15, 20 family members in his company. And incredibly, they have a rule of wherever they go on vacation together to never talk about business, which seems impossible for what they do. And they somehow find a way to leave that back at the office, which is amazing.
Yeah. No, I was raised, my parents own their own business together. And like you said, they had different parts though. Like one was an admin, one was in operations. And it's interesting because now my brother is my business partner. So, definitely at family get togethers, you know, no shop talk, and you got to put some boundaries in place, but it can be a really great working relationship because you know the person so well.
Yeah. Yeah. They have every bit as much passion as you do. And there's no question. I mean that, but they go through everything that you go through, good, bad, and the other. And, but you know, they also, and to this day, they will look at you with, it's hard to describe. They're the most caring people in the world for you, but they'll also look at you with the most real lens. If you want somebody to be your coach and cheerleader all the time, that may not be them, and that's okay. I don't necessarily need someone to pick me up, make me feel good all the time. I need somebody to, hey, is this okay? I wouldn't do that. Or, hey, is this letter all right? No, you don't want to send that out like that. Yeah. And there's
gonna be a lot of, with you.
They will be real with you, and real people are the best. They are the best. Cheerleaders. A client of mine once said, "The best. It's really great to have ambassadors and preachers within your organization. The only bad part about it is, are they ever going to tell you this isn't what I would do? Like, are they always going to be just?" Yes, that's great, boss. I think you're amazing. I totally believe in you. Those people are great sometimes, but when they're not great is they're just drinking the Kool-Aid to no end and never steering you from making a mistake potentially.
Yeah.
That is what I can say. My wife and my parents also were like, we love you, but I don't know about that. So you may not understand it. You may, when you're in that position sometimes, and you may not love it when you hear it. You don't have to love it, but you have to appreciate what that they're always looking out for you, no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So what were some of those challenges that you encountered in the early days?
The early days, I think, it's often said that new business development, I think, is always, the thing that you have to realize, and that I didn't right away, was that there is no such thing as, say, a creative. There is no such thing as an account person. And I think when I was in agencies or in marketing firms, it was always, okay, creatives over here, account people over there. And when you're working for yourself, there is no, that's not my job. It just doesn't exist. And people often say, well, you can hire, you can delegate, you can do this and you can do that. Like, all right, well, I'm not made of money to just go, you know, when you're starting out to just, you know, start hiring everyone under the sun for things that you maybe don't want to do or can't do. Mm-hmm. So you learn very, very quickly to wear the hats that are not as comfortable. So going in, I thought, well, this is great. I'll do the writing, and my other friend over here, he's going to be doing the sales, new business stuff. And he was, as great as he was and is, I think I realized that I needed to be just as great. And I needed to be just at sales, at new business, having a conversation with a prospect.
Yep.
In networking. If I was to, I mean, I can definitely think about, there was a time early on, and it was maybe 2 years into it, and I had always gone to networking events with somebody else. And my partner, Tom, he couldn't go to an event for some reason at the last minute. And I was like, oh my God, I got to go myself. And I don't know what this is going to be like. I don't know anybody. I think I might know one person, but I don't know them really well. I was petrified. Yeah. I did not want to go into a room by myself. But the nice thing, obviously, that happens over time is the more you do that kind of stuff, just like presenting, the more you realize that you're just having a conversation.
Yeah.
And you're just getting to know people. And if you get out of pitch mode, I think that's really what helps ease that a little bit, where you're like, I'm just trying to get to know people. I'm just trying to have a conversation. And if things are good, I'd like to maybe have three or four people in this room that I can have a follow-up one-on-one with. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get that at first. I mean, I really thought I had to be on. And you don't have to be on. You don't have to be pitchy. It's like the last thing you should be.
Yeah.
So I didn't get that right away. And then once I got more and more comfortable with it, then I realized that that was something that if I wanted to be any kind of successful, I needed to be able to sell the work, but I didn't have to pitch the work. Mm-hmm. So, I have never, since I was in an agency, I don't really pitch. And that's been a big difference, is I don't pitch stuff. I have a discovery meeting with them, mm-hmm. and I say, okay, well, let's hear a little bit about you. I can tell you about me. I ask them a lot of questions, and I'm not there for a dog and pony, like, here's all the cool stuff I've done, blah, 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 blah. And I'm talking for 50 minutes out of 60. That's not me. I am totally in discovery mode. And if at the end of that, there's a next little step that we might take, then we do it. Mm-hmm. And if I had known now what I knew then in that respect, I wouldn't have tried so hard. Like, I wouldn't have tried to push. The more you push and pitch and try to be someone other than you're not, the more you try to be on, mm-hmm. the less natural it can feel. And it never, I mean, not even when I was doing it, it never felt natural. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're not on a, you don't have to be on a stage. You just have to relate to people. That's what they want. Like, yeah. they just want to, you know, talk to someone who gets them and doesn't just say, here's all about us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always the thing you want to do. So there's a lot of that, of understanding your presentation style and your comfort, as well as wearing hats that you just never thought you would wear. There's always at least one or two that you are going to wear that nobody else can, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So with sales, what strategies did you find worked well for nurturing that relationship with prospects?
I think the nurturing that I have found, I think networking groups are great, but you have to first and foremost understand which room you belong in. They're not all created equal. And so your client doesn't have to be in the room, but somebody who can introduce you to the client is just as important. So you first want to think about, okay, is this the right room to be in? But then the next step to nurture that person, I think, especially now, is I really just try to give them at first some, this is overused, added value. But the added value is not, hey, here's something that we've done necessarily. It's, hey, this is a great article. I thought this would be something that you would be interested in. Let's have a, could we have a Zoom, get to know each other a little bit. I like soft nurturing. I don't like going in their heart. Some people do. To me, it just doesn't feel, I don't know. It feels weird. Like,
doesn't feel authentic.
It doesn't feel authentic. And if anybody knows anything about me, what you see is what you get. I don't hold back anything, and I don't have much of a filter, for better and for worse. And the thing about it is, like, let's say I might connect to somebody on LinkedIn. I'm certainly not going to start pitching them all about, here's me and here's what we do and here's our full service stuff.
Yeah.
But we get that every day, don't we?
Yeah.
So why, instead of being just one more of those and probably not getting a response, why not nurture them with some questions, let's say, about their industry? Hey, we've found in working with other people in your space that this and this and this comes up. Has that been a problem for you too? And that's it. Like, I don't like to mention anything about me or my business until maybe the third or fourth touch. Mm-hmm. Because up to that point, hopefully what happens is they respond to at least one of those touches early on. Mm-hmm. But let's say that they do. Well, then say on the fourth touch, you might say, is there something that maybe we can carve out some time? And I think there's something here. I have some ideas. I think that's usually how I couch it. I say, I don't say, here's this great product that we have, this great service. I say, I have some ideas about, something that, and it really is specific to their service, their product, their category. Mm-hmm. And would you like to maybe carve out some time where I can share some of those ideas with you? Most of the time, people are going to be better than you think about responding, because you're not going in there saying, we've worked with blah, 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 and you should work with us too.
Yeah.
I don't, but let's say that then they do respond to that. Then it's, you're still just kind of guiding them along the lines of the very first face-to-face, the first Zoom, the first exchange of any kind. By the time we get to a discovery meeting, at the end of that discovery meeting, we're going to go forward or not. And that's one touch in itself, but it doesn't mean an engagement, What it means is, and this is every bit in my mind as much of the nurturing process as anything, is there is a try before you buy. In my case, the try is the strategy, and it's a paid strategy that's not that much, but it just, by the end of say 3-4 weeks, then, okay, do you like this roadmap? Does it make sense? Yes, I do. But who's going to do it for me? Well, I can do it for you if you want. And that's how the ironic thing about it is, it's not getting them to the engagement. You're really, if you're good at it, it's getting them to the try. So that's really the big thing is you get them to that try phase of where they are parting with dollars or they're parting with time. And they're ready to just see, they've gone past the short list. Now they're just trying to see, are you the right person for us?
Right.
Yeah. And then if you can get them to agree to that, I would say 90% of the time, you're going to turn them into a regular client.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I have to say one of the biggest things in this business that has had an impact on my life is being a part of there's a community I belong to called Duct Tape Marketing, developed by a guy named John Janch. And I think one of the things that they do in that is they have what's called the marketing hourglass. And so in my nurturing, I try to use that framework in everything I do, whether that is a strategic partner, whether it is an actual prospect. And it's, most people say it's, you know, 3 or 4 phases. Well, in this, it's know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, refer. So most people, when they're nurturing, they see the buy as the finish line. And in reality, it's every bit about repeating, and it's every bit about getting them to refer and review you.
Yeah.
So that part gets neglected, and the try part gets neglected. It's usually like, oh, they downloaded our ebook. Why aren't they a customer by now? Like, well, because you haven't given them that little in-between baby step that you need them to take.
Yeah.
It could be, I don't care if it's $49 or whatever. It could be $10, but get them to commit to some kind of dollar amount that shows that they're serious. Mm-hmm. And then you can say, I think these guys are going to be a client because they're doing that. And I think that happens a lot now. Never knew that the first time around. Never.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you've broken it down. So would you consider that one step where basically it's the try step, is that right? Where they're actually putting their credit card down. Would that be the foot in the door offer, or is that different?
It is. It's your foot in the door offer. So you want to think about it as it kind of goes beyond, say, it's not like just a downloadable ebook or white paper. That's more in the previous trust phase. But if they've done it, that's good. Mm-hmm. You've got an email, a name, a phone number, maybe from that. That's great. But then the very next stage, yeah, with the try, you're thinking about, is it just something that they pay for? And there are a lot of formats for that, whether it is a short 30-minute webinar or an hour-long webinar or course or again, a strategy of some sort, maybe more of a high level strategy. But in our case, there's two different kinds of strategy. It doesn't really matter. They can do the light version of it, the 50,000 foot view, or they can do the more drilled down interview people, you know, a little more intensive. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's not a lot of money that you're usually, no matter what, asking people to lay out. When they are ready to take the next step after the try, then you can talk about, okay, what's the investment? So that's the thing I think people shouldn't get too hung up on if they can avoid it, is it's not about the price. It's about getting people to part with dollars to show they're committed.
Yes.
And that's really the biggest thing. I was just having a conversation with a strategic partner about it this morning, and I was like, man, just get that out there with a certain price tag that feels good to you. You don't have to give it away. Definitely do not do free. I am totally against free stuff, especially in the try phase. I wouldn't do that because you just don't know if these people are serious when it's free.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of qualifying that has to be done when it's free, and you just don't know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. So try to get them to part with some time or part with some dollars or both. And then you know, okay, how qualified are these folks? Maybe a little bit more qualified than the ones that just downloaded my ebook.
Yeah.
So
very interesting. Yeah. And then, so once you have determined that a prospect is someone that you would like to work with, how do you avoid them procrastinating and, you know, do business with them?
I think procrastinating as far, well, here's the procrastinating that sometimes can be really, really bad, which is you have to hold them accountable to the things that you need them to do. So for example, I don't need them to do a ton, but I can't suddenly start posting stuff all over the internet without them looking at it, without them saying this is good. It's happened, but I don't love it. So I think I always want to have some touches with them during the month. So with most clients, with all clients, I'll say at least once a month, I'm always talking to them. That's for sure. But then, for many others, it's every week or every other week, we're doing a status meeting. We're talking about what's coming down the pipe and then, really what's, in front of us to do. And by us, it means not just me, it means them too. So right. I don't see clients, first of all, I don't think they're always right. And I do think that, if you want to see them as partners rather than the last thing you want to be is an order taker, there's no fun in being an order taker. So if you want them to feel like they're part of this journey with you, come along with me and we're going to hopefully get you to a better place, then you have to spell out as soon as possible what you expect of them. So, I have my coach, my business coach said, this is great. This one sheet you have when someone signs up with you, here's the things we're going to do. But he said, on the other side, you should put what you expect of them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can do that. And it felt a little weird, but once I, you know, the biggest thing is you have to have rules. So the biggest rule that sometimes happens is approving things. I think content marketers get this all the time, which is, okay, you did a blog, you did some social media, you did whatever, and you need them to look at it, to review it, and to say, revise this or revise that, or this looks great, put it out there. Well, they need within a certain period of time to do that. You cannot have somebody who goes, oh, sorry, next couple of weeks are bad. Like, no.
No.
That's not how it works.
Your team will be so frustrated.
Yeah, yeah. Like, no. You, if you can't do it, get somebody else to do it for you. I'm not waiting around for you to bless this thing.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I think that's really good. And the other, like I said, is the accessibility of them to have, you're really building a relationship every week or every other week. And then the other thing I think that's really important and underrated is a project management software so that, you know, you can really have everybody as part of the team. It's something that they use. They don't just get reported back to. So, you know, everybody's got their favorites. I like monday.com myself, but no matter what, the thing about it is they know what they're responsible for. They know when they have to get you back some thoughts, revisions, whatever that is that they're responsible for. And you absolutely hold them accountable as a team member. And you do not let more than a couple weeks go by, if not even that, before you say, what's going on? And I got to get better at that myself, with some things that people ask me for, but you got to just stay in front of them and go from there.
Yeah. I love it. I love that you, are just so upfront and just basically over communicate your expectations right from the start. Yeah. I think that just helps prevent a lot of problems down the road when you just set those expectations right from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is underrated, but I think part of that actually, even part of that is share some things that you have found on the web that have nothing to do with what you're doing for them, but you just thought that would be really, really interesting for them to read about. So, if it's an article related to culture and they're dealing with, and part of the things they do is help improve cultures. Well, why wouldn't they want to get that kind of article?
Yeah.
And that stuff is very, they love getting those kinds of things where it's like, it's not just sharing for the sake of sharing, but it's showing that you have a passion for their business.
Yeah.
Their business, their process, everything about them. And the more you can immerse yourself in their world, they will appreciate it tremendously.
Yeah. So, I love it.
Yeah.
So what has been the biggest overall challenge you've had to overcome when growing your agency?
I think, just one, huh? let's see. I think the biggest challenge, there is one that I think it's hard, but it's a necessity, is content. People come in the door for content. There may be a lot of things in the wheel that we do, but, people come in the door for content more than anything, probably even more than strategy. Oh, I heard you were a good writer. And knock on wood, they've always been pretty darn happy with the writing. But a boss of mine had a great phrase that he always used, and he said, you are a prisoner of your own genius. And what he meant by that is, if you are known for one thing, but you try to get known for other things bigger than what you are, that's okay. But, just go all in on who that new person is. And mm-hmm. So what I found myself doing was, the biggest challenge that I saw, was that, okay, people love you for writing, but content has a scalability problem. One person can only do so much before they have to delegate.
Yes.
And you cannot be a production factory of a million different blogs all the time. You're going to burn out. You're not going to love your job. And I found that's what I was doing. I was like, okay, I'm going to check that box. I got that person their blog. I'm like, wait a minute. What's going on here? This thing that people like me for, this thing that I'm supposed to love and have done for a long time, I don't love anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a problem. That was a wake-up call. So I said, first of all, I'm going to delegate more stuff to people I like. It doesn't mean, and the clients don't care if you personally did it, as long as you have your eyes on it. So I still write stuff, but I'm also very much a creative director too, and saying, okay, I'm gonna look at this stuff before it goes out the door. I'm gonna make sure it's okay, and then we'll present it to that client. And they're fine with that. They just want your eyes on it. Their worst fear is that you're gonna be one more of those kinds of shops that says, where the president comes in or another high ranking person and says, if you have any questions, my door's always open. And then you like never hear from that person ever again.
Yes.
And so I didn't want to be that. So I think I said, if I write too much, I'm going to be taken away from the other parts of what I do for people. I want people to service them personally. I won't be able to go to as many meetings and things like that. So mm-hmm. I've learned and I'm learning to delegate much more. It's not a question of, can you do it? You can do a lot of things.
Yep.
But should you? Is that where you're best needed? And
yes. The thing
that I realized is nobody can replace you most of the time for new business development.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the fact. People who don't even see themselves as new business developers, they are the best new business developers that their company can provide. It's not that they can't hire salespeople, train them up, do that kind of stuff. They can. But early on, at least at first, you're going to have to be that person.
Yeah.
And no matter how good or bad you think you are, you're probably better than you think. Mm-hmm. And you probably explain things better than you think. And you're much, much better than somebody who just off the street who needs to understand your processes and history and your value and all that stuff. You already know that.
Yeah.
So it's easier for you to wear that hat, as uncomfortable as it may be, and then delegate some of the things that you can do, but that's not where the business needs you most.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the biggest lesson I have learned, the biggest challenge that I still go through. Because every moment that I go, oh, heck, I can just whip that out on Canva. I can design that. Yeah, I could. But should I? Like, that's 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
Or, you know, yeah, I can do video. Like, but video editing? Oh, my God, that's like 5-6 hours out of my Sunday. And do I really want to do that? Like, maybe I should probably give that to somebody else who can do that for me, and I can get some higher value things out there for this business.
Yeah.
So I think that's the challenge and struggle that so many entrepreneurs have.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's so important to just be evaluating and making sure you're not a bottleneck to the company, and then assessing where your time is most valuable to the company as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's a, I think the thing that I've been learning now more than anything is, there's a friend of mine who runs a boot camp, and he said, you know, Dan, forget about ideal client for a second. Forget about what you do. What are the things that bring you joy? Like, who are the people who bring you joy?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the ideal client. Like, what is the most fun that you have? And you don't have to do things for the business that you hate, that you need to do. But what are the things that you think you really love? And I said, you know, I think I actually love being in front of people, which is really ironic considering who I used to be. And I said, I love being in front of people. And it can be speaking. It can be doing this. It can be, you know, just having a regular status meeting. I feel the most alive when I am interacting with other people,
mm-hmm.
especially now more than ever.
Yes.
So I said, that's what I love. That's what brings me joy. And I feel like in that time that we have, that 30 minutes or that 60 minutes, I am helping them clear some clouds mm-hmm. of whatever their problem was. And it's a lot different than if you're saying, okay, we're building this website. It's going to be great in like 4 months, 5 months or so. Just be patient. It'll be awesome. Whereas like in an hour, you can make them feel like they've got more answers than they had an hour before. And that's the best. I mean, that's the best part of my day. Like doing that, dare I say, more than the things that people may come in the door for.
Mm-hmm.
If you got to be good in one thing, I say very humbly, I think I'm pretty good at writing. But the business doesn't always need you for what you love. And that's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really hard thing to do, is to say, I love doing this, but I can't if I want to grow. I've got to give this to somebody else.
Yep.
That is so hard, like, to do. Especially you have to like push yourself down and say, you can do it, but you shouldn't be doing it right now.
Yeah.
And boy, is that a work in progress. I haven't mastered it yet, but I'm getting there.
Yeah. One thing I found helpful that I try to look at through the lens of is, what is this task valued at per hour? You know, is this a, you know, is this a $15 an hour task, $20 yeah. an hour task, or is this like $1,000 an hour task?
Yeah.
And looking at it through that lens, and then that helps me kind of delegate my time accordingly.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And one of the things that a colleague of mine did, and I don't know why I didn't think of this, but he did something where they don't have to be under your roof physically like a traditional workplace. But if you have all of your freelancers, your, you know, kinds of people that you might use for anything, do an org chart, a true org chart of what are the things you do and probably should be doing more than others. Mm-hmm. What are the things that these other people that you've used can do as well? And it's no different than a regular business that has, you know, employees and a roof and brick and mortar and all that. You don't have to have that in order to have a true org chart. And it just kind of, I don't know why, but it just helps me when I look at that sometimes and I go, okay, this came in, therefore it should go to this person. And I don't know why seeing that somehow does that for me, but it's just a good reminder to say, this is where you're supposed to be now. This, mm-hmm. this is Dan version 3, 4, whatever. And you're supposed to be this for where Caliber needs to go. And for these other things or other, you know, other tasks, then these people are supposed to handle it. And you're supposed to look at it, but you don't have to be doing it. So that is always an interesting lesson to keep learning all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Well, yeah. Dan, I have really enjoyed picking your brain and learning about, you know, your sales strategies and also how you are growing your agency. So I really appreciate you joining me today and sharing all your knowledge with us.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for having me. It flew by. So thank you so much for having me. It was a terrific, terrific experience.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and we'll see you next time.